Welcome to Open Spaces. From Wyoming Public Radio News, I'm Camila Kadalska. The primary elections are almost over. They still need to be certified by the Secretary of State. We are going to take this Open Spaces to digest and analyze what happened. We chat with representatives of three voting blocs in the Wyoming legislature.
We'll have a majority of the legislators in office who have very little experience in the legislative process.
Wyoming's current Speaker of the House will be out of politics for now. This comes after a very divisive campaign cycle.
I was hoping Wyoming would reject that negativity, but they didn't. That seems to be a winning formula.
And we turn away from politics to hear about how artificial intelligence is making its way into journalism, and a small-town newsroom in Wyoming is ground zero. Those stories and more on Open Spaces. Stay with us.
Did you know that all six episodes of Human Nature's latest season are out right now? That's right. Season 9 of our award-winning podcast has a little bit of everything. A Wyoming man who spent his summer working as a night shepherd in Switzerland.
All I could hear was my breathing and the steps, and everything was so dark. And I just thought, okay, this must be what it's like to be an astronaut on the moon.
The story of one of the biggest animal rescues in history.
And I picked up the phone and they said, when can you get here? And so the next day, I actually took a plane because it never occurred to me what was ahead for me over the next few weeks.
And a woman who followed the gray whale migration hundreds of miles with her son.
I was exhausted one evening, fed up of trying to work. I'd had a really bad day. And so I was like, right, I'm not working. I'm going to read about whales.
Find Human Nature on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. That's Human Nature, one word, one N.
Welcome to Open Spaces. From Wyoming Public Radio News, I'm Camila Kadalska. More than 122,000 people turned out to vote in Wyoming's primary election. While that's the lowest primary turnout since 2016, Wyoming Public Radio heard across the state. Wyomingites were eager for their voices to be heard. Wyoming Public Radio's managing editor, Nikki Ouellette, is here. Hey, Nikki.
Hey, Camila. Happy primary.
Happy primary.
Yeah, a lot of the voters that we heard from in Cody, Lander, Teton County, Laramie, they were really excited to hit the polls.
It's my first time, so it's exciting for sure.
I feel like an American. So, yeah, I mean, that's one of the great privileges we have, right, is to select who represents us and who makes the laws that we live under. So
I got to bring my grandson to vote for the first time.
I am 19. Just went and voted for the first time.
It's everyone's civic duty to vote regardless of what's going on. And I think your local elections are probably way more important than the national election to your everyday life.
That was Nico McGee in Jackson, Lloyd Watkins in Cody, Carl Hunke and William Edlund in Lander, and Susan Purcell in Wilson.
That's great to hear the excitement. So voters were casting ballots under a couple new election laws this year.
Yes. So one is a new ID requirement that was enacted by the state legislature in 2021. Matthew was working at what he called Albany County's busiest polling station.
Only like one or two people mm-hmm. have forgotten their IDs, and it's usually just running back out to the car to get it.
And that's exactly what happened to Lisa Kissling in Lander.
I haven't turned in my ballot yet because I need to go to my truck and get my ID. I've never had to have it before.
Another new election law was not so easy to address. Wyoming now runs closed primaries, and that means registered voters need to declare a party affiliation months before the primary, even before candidates file to run.
Right, to be able to vote the party ballot of your choice in the primary. This year, that deadline was back in May, and we heard from voters across the state who weren't able to vote for candidates that they wanted. One of our reporters, Olivia Wheats, up in Cody, heard from retired cowboy Mark Harvey.
And I had people telling me, yeah, you can vote. And then next minute, no, you can't vote. And so the elections officer had to get a hold of Cheyenne and find out if I could vote or not. Well, the damn thing is I couldn't.
And why is that?
Well, because I'm unaffiliated and you can only vote if you're Republican or Democrat. I just think it's a sorry state of affairs when a guy who's been a hired hand in Wyoming his whole life can't vote. There's something wrong with that.
Ann Fitzgerald of Laramie was frustrated that she wasn't able to switch parties.
Last year, I changed parties in order to be able to vote for Liz Cheney against Hageman, and then I forgot to change parties back and I missed the deadline. And I also, in some ways, my vote for things like senator doesn't count. As a Democrat in Wyoming, I don't always feel like it matters on the federal level or even on state level.
Of course, come November's general elections, voters will be able to check the box for whichever candidate they like, regardless of party affiliation. What else did we hear from voters?
Yeah, we heard a range of issues and concerns that drew voters out to the polls. Around Cody and Lander, voters we talked to mentioned
property taxes.
Property taxes.
Taxes are out of control.
And the other thing is property taxes.
And around the state, many voters, like Kissling and Hunky, who we heard from earlier, and along with Maggie, they're all in Lander, they were thinking about how divisive politics have become.
I think that we have a very divided country right now, and I think it's sad. We need to become more willing to speak to the other side in terms that they understand, and we need to become more united.
I grew up here and everything has gotten very, very polarized since I was a kid.
Nationally, it's very divisive. Doesn't seem like anybody can get along and get things done. Locally, it's not as bad as nationally, but I've seen a lot more negativity this year in our local elections, which, you know, I don't like. You're either pushed far right or you're pushed far left. And again, when you do that, it's hard to get things done.
Did voters we talked to mention anything else?
Oh, yeah. A couple mentioned more local issues that they came out to vote for.
I wanted to vote for the senior ballot question on it.
I'm 66 years old, and I think I was probably in my 50s before I realized the importance of down ballot voting. And especially things like in this community, county commissioner, things like that. I think it's super, super important.
That was Don Newman in Lander and Nancy Stevenson in Jackson.
It's really great to hear voices of people around the state. Thanks so much, Nikki.
Yeah, and thanks to our reporters, Hannah Merzbach in Lander, Olivia Wheats in Cody, Jordan Uplinger and Jeff Victor in Laramie, and our partners over at Jackson Hole Community Radio, Dante Fulpola-Ankney and Jenna McMurtry. Thanks to all of them for checking in with these voters.
The Freedom Caucus made some important gains in the primary. We checked in with the caucus chair, John Baer, to hear what he thinks about the results. Baer was running uncontested in the primary for House Seat 31, which he has held since 2021. He is uncontested in the general election as well. Wyoming Public Radio's state government reporter Chris Clements spoke with Baer.
What was your reaction about the news on Tuesday?
Well, it really blew me away because it was much more favorable than I anticipated.
What did the gains made by the Freedom Caucus in this past primary tell you about Wyomingites, how they're feeling right now?
I was not shocked by the fact that Wyomingites really supported the type of legislators that Wyoming Freedom Caucus represents. But I am thankful that the voters really came out strongly for those types of legislators. And, you know, these candidates really worked hard, so they deserve the credit for getting themselves into office. A lot of door-to-door work, a lot of communicating with the voters and letting them know who they were. We did a tremendous amount of work trying to inform the voters on, you know, voting records so they knew which legislators to support and which ones really didn't match what we believe is the core values of the Wyoming voters.
And could you tell me just a bit about those core values?
Sure. I think one of the easiest ways to describe it would be that our voters, or our legislators and our voters, really believe in the 23 planks of the Wyoming Republican Party platform. And those are just real common sense things that have been a part of the platform for decades, really. It hasn't changed a great deal, maybe a word here or there. But for the most part, those are timeless principles. Those principles align with our Wyoming Constitution and the U.S. Constitution. So those things are, for instance, smaller government, pro-life, pro-family, pro-traditional family at that, and certainly pro-Second Amendment, with an understanding that our gun rights are really not about hunting but they're about defending ourselves against a tyrannical government.
What does the Freedom Caucus hope to do in the next legislative session? I mean, do you have any priorities you'd like to get passed in 2025?
So I believe it's important that we do respond to the voters by providing them with the kind of return on investment of their votes, giving us a majority. And so I think what you're going to see is serious efforts to pass property tax reform and relief, things that were vetoed by the governor in this last session. And you're also going to see gun-free zones eliminated in the House of Representatives. You're going to see DEI funding for the university and the community colleges, the funding for that type of education, that woke education, if you will, is going to be limited, if not eliminated. And then I don't think we'll ever stop fighting for the unborn and protecting them. So you'll see efforts in that regard. The governor did veto an effort just this last session, and you'll see us continuing to work on that area. We want to keep porn out of our libraries, and we want to simplify state funding. So that's a real big task there. It's not real sexy for the people, but it'll take a lot of steps to kind of undo the complication that's been developed over the last several decades. I believe it's unnecessary. It is keeping our funding and our financing for the state from being transparent. And I believe it's important that every voter knows where the money goes, what's happening with their tax dollars, and what kind of stewards we are being with those dollars.
Are you concerned at all? I mean, I heard about a few incumbent losses as well, and I know those were, you know, part of the, many of them, the Wyoming caucus, but are you concerned at all with those incumbent losses this past primary that there might be a loss of institutional knowledge about the legislature?
Let me tell you, Chris, why I'm not concerned. Number one, the people who have put their names in to run for office in this regard, they're devoted to this state. They're devoted enough to really dig in and learn what they need to learn to be able to make good decisions. And the Wyoming Freedom Caucus has been doing that since its inception. And that is, you know, doing evaluations of bills, looking at the consequences of those bills and informing legislators so that they can make a good vote as far as an informed vote.
That was Representative John Baer, chairman of the House Freedom Caucus here in Wyoming.
Up next, we check in with a representative aligned with the more moderate wing of the state GOP. Stay with us. This is Open Spaces.
If you're searching for a break from the news, look no further than Wyoming Public Media. We provide three music channels for whatever may be your taste or mood: Classical Wyoming, Jazz Wyoming, and Wyoming Sounds. You can find them all on a variety of platforms for listening, including streaming, Wyoming Public Radio app, smart speakers, and FM radio. Just go to wyomingpublicmedia.org and listen.
Part of why I love Wyoming Public Radio is because it is probably the last remaining really truly valid radio format here in the U.S. because it still provides really valid content that you can't get anywhere else.
I love Wyoming Public Radio. It's just important.
Help celebrate I Love Wyoming Public Radio Week by clicking the I Love Wyoming Public Radio icon at wyomingpublicmedia.org. You can access listener testimonials and find out how to record your own. Just look for I Love Wyoming Public Radio at wyomingpublicmedia.org.
Welcome back to Open Spaces. Lloyd Larson is a Lander State representative. He aligns with more moderate Republicans. Larson faced Tina Clifford in the primaries and won by over 200 votes. He's held House District Seat 54 since 2013. I asked Larson what was surprising to him about the primary results.
Yes, I thought that there were a number of longstanding legislators who have some real institutional knowledge and had really been serving their communities well, that lost. I think of Amber Oakley, Tom Walters, Albert Summers in the Senate side, that I really was quite surprised about. I think the biggest question in my mind is that with the turnover, particularly in the House, we will have a majority of the legislators in office who have very little experience in the legislative process and in the committee process. That could present some challenges that may slow down the ability to get some comprehensive legislation through the process. As you know, some of that process is quite detailed, and it really is important for legislators to have some understanding of just the structure of bills and how bills are being interpreted by agencies and by our LSO staff. And that impacts the amendments that perhaps legislators try to bring to amend the bill if they're not familiar with the existing statute that the bill is addressing. All of that set aside, you know, so what you may have to do is when you're teaching your child how to drive, you leave the truck in first gear and cut down the road at a speed that they can handle before you head out onto the highway. And, you know, it might be worthy of this legislative session to maybe step back off the throttle a little bit, you know, not to get the cart in front of the horse, so to speak, so that we still do a good job of crafting and passing meaningful legislation.
Also, the Freedom Caucus has gained a bunch of seats. How do you envision working with, you know, all the different parties, so Democrats, Independents, and Freedom Caucus, to get things done during the next session?
As best I can. You know, I don't say that frivolously. You know, people elect you to go down and represent them and not to go down and be to impede the process. And so my job is to go down there and try to continue moving the state of Wyoming forward. That doesn't matter if the Democrats are 100% control and I'm the only Republican there, or if Freedom Caucus is in control, or if the traditional Republican, conservative Republican Party is more in control. We still have to work with each other to try and get things accomplished. You know, that's our mandate. That's what people expect us to do. It's not about Lloyd, right?
And are there any particular areas that you're hoping to focus on in the next legislative session?
Well, in this interim committee, there's several things that are taking place that were passed on. A lot of the work from the Mental Health Task Force, there's some bills that the task force has moved on to Judiciary and to Labor and Health. The Appropriations Committee is taking on two pretty significant lifts, one with gaming, how our gambling statutes look, and giving some definition there. We're hearing from the public that our gaming is expanding more broadly and more extensively than perhaps the citizens of the state would like, and so we're trying to get a feel for that.
And what do you think the results for the primary tell you about how Wyomingites are feeling?
I don't know. I think that's total speculation.
Is there anything else that you want to add?
Well, I would say it was the most unusual primary I've been involved in. My race wasn't the closest primary race I've ever had. In fact, I've had two others that were closer, but it was certainly the nastiest.
How so?
Just with all the outside negative mailers that were coming in with inaccurate information that I think had a fairly significant influence.
Have you ever, in your time, encountered something like that before?
No.
That was Representative Lloyd Larson talking about the primary election results. It isn't easy being a Democratic lawmaker in Wyoming. There's only two in the state Senate and five in the House, but after Tuesday's primary, many districts fell into the hands of the Freedom Caucus, making the chasm between Democrats and Republicans even vaster. Wyoming Public Radio's Melody Edwards spoke with the state House Minority Leader Mike Yin of Jackson. She caught him on his return trip from the Democratic National Convention in Chicago.
You were out at the DNC when you were hearing about last night's results, but how were you feeling as those results were rolling in?
Yeah, so I think I was in the middle of a couple of different speeches. And I think the DNC, like both conventions, are a little bit of a pep rally. And so the energy has been high. But then seeing the results come in, I think it was a little disappointing, both on the turnout. So the turnout looked really low, and the results were, frankly, ones that I did not expect. But I think it came as a lesson learned that those flyers really did reach people.
Yeah, maybe you can talk a little bit more specifically about what some of the biggest surprises were to you.
I think Laramie County were some of the biggest surprises. Members that have faithfully served their communities for many years, getting overturned from flyers that were sent maybe every day for like the last 2 weeks, right? What it is for me, I think, is a learning experience on what the Republican Party looks like now. These are all partisan primary voters, right? And so what that looks like for the members of that party choosing those nominees.
Yeah, that was going to be one of my questions. Just what are some of the lessons that you might be learning just as the minority leader from this kind of radical shift? Any other insights that you gathered?
I think that one of the biggest is that we really shouldn't be deciding who is the elected representative by the primary system that we have. And I think it leads to outcomes where the decisions are being made by less than 1,000 people, right? For an entire 10,000 person district. In some cases, there were votes where it was less than that, right? It was significantly less. And I think that the best way to choose the best representative isn't a decision by only a tenth of the members of the district.
What is going to be your approach, do you think, going forward to be able to work with these Freedom Caucus lawmakers?
If you have an entire caucus that doesn't want to solve problems with Democrats and in fact rates itself as one that doesn't solve problems with Democrats, then it sounds like they want to run the state by themselves and they don't need us to solve problems. But in my opinion, based on the policies that they've tried to move in the past, they aren't going to solve any problems at all. They're only going to create more.
Are there some bigger issues that you feel like Democrats are going to need to play defense to just make sure that certain kinds of really important programs continue to get funded, things like that? What are some of those issues that you would really prioritize?
Some of the things that have been pushed for in the past by Freedom Caucus, they voted and proposed amendments several times to cut funding for the University of Wyoming. And for community colleges are the economic engines of our state. And if we intend to make sure that we have workforces for an economy in the future, then we're going to need them. Are we going to lose more young people? Two, they actually restrict people's personal freedom, as we've seen in the bills passed that were banning abortion. Not only do they restrict it to the extent of many other states, but they've proposed some of the most restrictive abortion bans without any exceptions. And the only reason that it ever got amended in the past was because of non-Freedom Caucus members and Democrats. And so if you believe that there should be freedoms for people who need healthcare, then you're going to lose it under the current legislature if they actually get control of the entire House.
Going into the general election, a lot of these Freedom Caucus candidates will be going unopposed, but there are a few that will have Democratic opponents. What are some of those races that we should be watching for heading into the general election?
Both in Laramie County and in a couple of districts across the state, there are chances for Democrats to work with Republicans in those districts who are dissatisfied with the choices that their party has chosen to make some sane solutions for the state. If not, I'm afraid of the place the state is going to go. And I've already had people tell me that it's going to be a place where they don't want to raise children. They don't think that they can have a job. They're afraid for their neighbors and their friends. And so I do hope that people do come out to vote in the general election.
I've been speaking with the State House Minority Leader Mike Yin of Jackson. We've been discussing how Democrats can start to work with a House that might have a majority from the Freedom Caucus. So thank you so much, Mike, for taking some time to chat with us.
Thanks, Melody. I appreciate it.
And now to one race that was a pretty big upset. Wyoming Speaker of the House and veteran of the cowboy state lawmaking world, Albert Sommers, will be out of politics for now. He's been in Wyoming politics for 11 years. This political upset in the primaries marks a larger shift in state politics, aligning more with the further right Freedom Caucus. Wyoming Public Radio's Caitlin Tan helps us unpack this all.
On the night of the Wyoming primaries, a few dozen Sublette County residents gathered for music and food outside a local bar. It was an election party intended for all, no matter who you voted for.
In the House District 20,
local musician Jared Rogerson interrupted the crowd with results.
For Senate 14,
those were two races that people were paying attention to, even across the state. That's because local rancher Albert Summers has led the Wyoming House for the past 2 years and served in this seat since 2013. His next political step was the Senate, so Summers was running for a spot, and he was hoping to pass the torch of his House seat on to local sheep rancher Kat Urbikite. Both are aligned with the Wyoming Caucus, a more moderate, traditional Republican group, and both of them lost to opponents with farther-right ideologies. Here's Urbikite.
This will make for some major changes in Wyoming and how things work, so we'll see how successful they are.
Urbikite is talking about the Freedom Caucus, a national far-right political faction that's gaining traction in the Wyoming Republican Party. Notably, Urbikite's opponent who won, LaBarge's Mike Schmid, isn't endorsed by the group, but he has donated $1,000 to the Freedom Caucus Political Action Committee. But Summers lost to Laura Pearson of the Kemmer area by about 200 votes. That's according to the Secretary of State's unofficial results. And she is endorsed by the Wyoming Freedom Caucus. In an interview shortly after results were called, Summers said this marks a new chapter for Wyoming politics.
I do have concerns, but ultimately, we will see how they lead, right? That remains to be seen. They haven't been in power before, so you can't say for sure how they will govern, but time will tell.
The Freedom Caucus made some gains in the primary, and depending how the general shakes out, could gain a majority in the state house. In the Senate, they endorsed four candidates, two of which won. Summers says he has concerns because the Freedom Caucus hasn't made his job easy. Tensions came to a fever pitch in the 2023 legislative session, even receiving national attention from outlets like Fox News.
Wyoming's GOP House Speaker is getting heat from his own party for blocking two Republican-backed bills.
One was touted as a don't say gay bill that would have limited what could be talked about in public schools. Summers said the bill would have stripped schools and communities of local control and that it might have been unconstitutional. And as Speaker, he let the bill die. Fast forward to this year's legislative session, and the Freedom Caucus had enough members in the House to circumvent Summers' leadership. They blocked 13 committee bills on day one in an attempt to curb government spending. This turned heads because committee bills are typically a shoo-in. Lawmakers and stakeholders spend months crafting them. And then this summer, the Freedom Caucus zeroed in on Summers' election campaign. Political action committees tied to the group accused Summers of being too liberal, something he pushes back on. So after the primaries were called, Summers said the negativity this campaign cycle was disheartening.
I was hoping Wyoming would reject that negativity, but they didn't. That seems to be a winning formula.
Even so, Summers said it's been a good political career. Highlights include passing tricky budgets during COVID and funding a trust fund for wildlife conservation. But he also said he just likes serving the people. He'll miss that.
It likely will feel weird, you know, come next January when everybody's gearing up to go to Cheyenne and I'm not. But, you know, life goes on. Life goes on.
Summers' House term ends in January, and Laura Pearson will step into the Senate seat that he lost. Pearson is new to the political scene. She's a fourth-generation sheep rancher in Lincoln County. She campaigned on being pro-ag and fossil fuels, against gender-affirming care for minors, against gun regulation, says life begins at conception, and supports limited government.
What got me engaged was COVID, obviously, and the 2020 election.
Before that, I wasn't really into politics.
She said she only recently started testifying during public comment on bills.
I believe that the 2020 election was stolen from President Trump. And then during COVID, I didn't feel like our state was protecting our citizens.
There's been no evidence that there was fraud in the 2020 election. Pearson knows that hers was a close race and that Summers has many staunch supporters.
We can agree on some things and not agree on others, you know, but I'm here to represent the people. It doesn't matter whether they're not far right or not.
And although Pearson aligns with the Freedom Caucus, she says it doesn't mean she'll necessarily vote with them in lockstep. For Wyoming Public Radio, I'm Caitlin Tan in Pinedale.
Up next, we unpack how many seats the Freedom Caucus actually gained in this primary on the road to Cheyenne. This is Open Spaces.
Want to keep up with local news but can't have your radio on 24/7? That's where Wyoming Public Radio's email newsletters come in. Get all of the local and regional news you want in your inbox. You can choose if you want an update every day or a weekly roundup of our top stories, or both. Sign up on our website, wyomingpublicmedia.org.
The Wyoming Public Radio app delivers great music 24/7. Stream Wyoming sounds, jazz Wyoming, and classical Wyoming. Download the Wyoming Public Radio app at wyomingpublicmedia.org.
Welcome back to Open Spaces. From Wyoming Public Radio News, I'm Camila Kadelska. The Road to Cheyenne is our special series about the primary elections. This week, we're breaking down the results. Who were Tuesday night's winners and losers, and what does that tell us about the state of Wyoming's politics? With me today is Wyoming Public Radio's State House reporter, Chris Clements. Hey, Chris.
Hey, Camila.
All right, so before we get into the state legislative races, Wyoming's lone House seat in the U.S. Congress and a U.S. Senate seat were on the ballot.
That's right. And as many expected, both Representative Harriet Hageman and Senator John Barrasso handily beat their primary challengers. Looking ahead to the November general election, Barrasso will face Democrat Scott Morrow of Laramie, and Hageman will face Kyle Cameron of Cheyenne.
Okay, so that was pretty much expected. And before we dive more into the results, we do have a little bit of an update on campaign finance reporting. Representative Barry Crago's fundraising wasn't included in the Secretary of State's top fundraising chart that we looked at.
Yeah, and when we physically tallied up his contributions for the cycle, he was actually the highest fundraiser. He raised over $89,000. That's $4,000 more than the top fundraiser in the SOS chart, which was Darren Smith, running for Senate District 6.
Right. It seems that we're missing big money. And Crago did win his seat by about 10% of the votes. Darren Smith won Senate District 6. That was actually the most crowded competition in this primary. Smith had five other opponents. And we hope to dig into why Crago's fundraising wasn't counted in the SOS's top fundraising chart a little more. And we will be updating our listeners on that, but we just wanted to note that right now. And so earlier this year, about 90,000 Wyomingites were purged from the voter roll for being inactive voters, basically meaning they didn't vote in the last election. So, Chris, what did the turnout look like this primary?
Well, the Secretary of State's unofficial results show a bit shy of 123,000 votes cast this year. That's down about 60,000 from the 2022 primary, and it's actually the lowest turnout since 2016. Worth noting, though, that the statewide seats like the governorship were on the ballot in 2022 and not this year.
So there was a little more to come out to vote for. Okay, so moving on to the primary election results, am I safe in saying that the far-right Wyoming Freedom Caucus has gained a majority in the state House?
With caveats, it looks like that's where things may be heading. Heading into the primary, the Freedom Caucus counted 26 members. When I look at their list of 42 endorsed candidates, 26 won and won't see an opponent in the general in November.
So they broke even at the very least?
Yes, but there are a handful of lawmakers who weren't endorsed by the caucus, but who are expected to vote with them. I know of at least five, and three of them won with no general opponent.
Okay, so that brings Freedom Caucus endorsed and aligned for sure wins to a total of at least 29.
Correct. And the Freedom Caucus could gain 6 more seats if all the candidates who are facing contested general elections all win.
So if everything goes their way, Freedom Caucus could have an even split or maybe a clear majority.
That's what I'm thinking.
Okay, so a lot of nuance, but some races could potentially still be contested in the general.
Right. And I talked to Representative John Baer, the chairman of the caucus, about exactly how many seats he's thinking they'll pick up once the dust settles.
All in all, you'll see, I believe, a net increase anywhere from 11 to 14. And there are still races ongoing in the general. And that's another reason. I think once you see the votes starting to tally up in the next session, it'll be pretty clear.
So that's more than we're estimating. But why can't the chair of the caucus say a specific number?
Well, I asked him exactly that, and here's how he responded.
We don't invite people to become members until after they have a proven voting record. So we won't put out any new invitations for those people who were recently elected in the primary. And maybe there will be a couple more very conservative legislators after the general. But they will go through at least one session and obtain a voting record before we will offer them an invitation to join. Now, there's a big difference really between being an ally and being a member of the Freedom Caucus. And that really has to do with whatever the wishes are of that legislator.
So like Baer just said, even if a candidate was endorsed by the Freedom Caucus, it doesn't mean they will become members or vote with the caucus come January. So this is all still very fluid.
Okay, that's helping clear some things in my mind. But let's pause here and switch gears. It seems like incumbent candidates didn't do too well this week.
Yeah, and like we heard earlier on the show, one surprising example of that was Speaker of the House Albert Summers losing to Laura Pearson, who's been endorsed by the Freedom Caucus. Meanwhile, my fellow state government reporter David Dudley was at a watch party for Representative Dan Zwanitzer's campaign on Tuesday, and Zwanitzer told him something pretty interesting.
This is the new normal in Wyoming. You know, we knocked off probably 75% of the leaders in the House, the people who'd been there multiple terms, decades, if not a century of institutional knowledge, will be taken out this year.
And he ended up losing to a Freedom Caucus candidate as well. So let's assume the caucus does have a majority in the next session. What did Baer say the caucus's priorities are in January?
He mentioned bringing back some property tax reform measures that Governor Mark Gordon vetoed last session. He also said they'd go after eliminating gun-free zones in the House of Representatives. Also, that they'd limit or eliminate funding for diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives and programs in the University of Wyoming and in community colleges, among other priorities.
And I said earlier that the caucus is far right, but he told you he disagrees with that characterization, didn't he? Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Sure. So as you know, of course, it's been an ongoing discussion of how best to describe the Freedom Caucus in our Wyoming Public Radio newsroom.
Yeah, as the caucus has gained traction in the state, we've used further right, far right, more conservative, and it's really to try to distinguish this bloc from the more moderate Republicans that have had power in the state legislature over the past few decades.
Right. And in Baer's view, we're alienating Wyomingites by using that terminology.
The word conservative has been thrown around and misused, so you can't use that word any longer. And so I would simply say that these are the true Republicans, or these are the true conservatives, those who really believe in smaller government and protecting the liberties and freedoms of our constituents.
Interesting. What Baer is saying there kind of mirrors what the state GOP sent out in a statement after the primary, saying Wyoming voters, quote, vetted their candidates and chose most of those dedicated to the Wyoming Republic Party platform and constitution, unquote. We'll have to keep talking that over as a team. I do want to note, though, one example of the Freedom Caucus gaining popularity in the state in the past couple of years is House District 24 that represents Cody.
Yeah, Nina Weber won that seat, and wasn't it her third time running for it?
Yeah, I used to be the Northwest reporter for Wyoming Public Radio and covered both of those elections, actually. And both times, Weber was running against Sandy Newsom. Newsom won the seat in 2018 and is considered a more moderate Republican. And then back in 2020 and 22, Weber ran against her, and each time Weber got closer and closer to beating her until this time when she actually won. Our colleague Olivia Wheats caught Weber the night of the primary.
And when I think about all of the voters that I had personal contact with, which was almost all of them, it tells me that they were looking for a change and they want transparency and they want somebody who's going to stand up and not take a knee.
So that kind of reflects this trend in the past couple of years. But back to you, Chris. You went to a watch party on the primary night, didn't you?
Yep. I was in Green River at the Sweetwater County Courthouse to watch Representatives Cody Wiley and J.T. Larson's results come in.
What was the vibe like over there?
About 20 people showed up, mostly county-level candidates and their friends and families. Everyone just sort of milling about. It was a pretty tense scene, though, as the numbers started to trickle in.
Why was it tense? What's at stake for these two candidates?
Well, for Wiley and Larson, they've been the subject of some, quote, inaccurate mailers from the Freedom Caucus PAC that have said they voted to remove Trump from the ballot. But they're both saying they never did that and that that vote didn't happen in the legislature.
Okay, so Wiley and Larson aren't part of the Freedom Caucus, so it was a tense watch party.
That's right, Camila. But at first, things were pretty loud, chaotic, and then it got quiet. Actually, the number two representative in the House was there, Rock Springs Representative Clark Stith. He's been a lawmaker in Cheyenne for 7 years, and when the results unofficially came in that he'd lost, it was pretty much silent.
Okay, and how did Wiley and Larson do?
They both fended off challengers endorsed by the Freedom Caucus, actually, but they were pretty narrow wins, less than 100 votes for each. I talked to J.T. Larson after the unofficial results showed he'd likely win against his opponent.
If there's common themes that we can agree on that benefit the entire state, then that's where I think we need to figure out, are we just arguing over a small little detail that we can, you know, come to an agreement on? Rather than just at each other's throats all the time.
And Wiley won by just 44 votes.
Wyoming is moving into a new direction. I don't know if it's good for the state. I've said several times, if we're not careful, it's just going to be, you know, a seasonal game show.
Okay, and has the Secretary of State certified the election results yet?
Actually, no. The Wyoming State Canvassing Board will convene on Wednesday at 10 a.m. to do just that. So we will be watching that as well.
Right, and we will be keeping an eye out for the general election also. And like we mentioned at the beginning, a couple of races where Freedom Caucus-aligned candidates won their primaries will be determined in the general election. How many?
6 altogether. Some independents and some Democrats are running against them.
Got it. Well, thank you so much, Chris.
Thanks, Camila.
All right, that's a wrap for this week's Road to Cheyenne. We're actually going to take a break from this series, but we will be back before the general with more analysis. How does artificial intelligence fit in with journalism? We unpack that question up next on Open Spaces.
This time on The Modern West, an interview with the guy who started a visionary new ranching program at the University of Wyoming.
We're also placing a lot of emphasis on public land and public land management because Wyoming is 50% public land.
The Rancher of the Future. It's a bonus episode for the re-release of our series, The Great Individualist. Find it under podcasts at wyomingpublicmedia.org.
Sometimes the news can be a little hard, but Around Wyoming is here to bring you the lighter side of things. Ever heard of frozen chicken curling? Or do you know how many of our residents compete in and win national competitions? Hint, it's a lot. Around Wyoming brings you that and more 4 times every weekday. You can also find Around Wyoming on our website, wyomingpublicmedia.org.
Welcome back to Open Spaces. Newsrooms around the country are talking about how to use AI in the wake of a recent journalism scandal in our region. A reporter in Cody resigned after he was caught using the technology to write stories and make up quotes. Wyoming Public Radio's Hannah Merzbach has more.
Reporter CJ Baker was sitting in his cubicle at the Powell Tribune office in Northwest Wyoming when his editor started reading an article out loud.
Yellowstone National Park, known for its stunning landscapes and diverse wildlife, is a place where visitors come to experience nature's beauty.
It was from a competing paper, the Cody Enterprise.
This incident serves as a stark reminder of the unpredictable nature of human behavior, even in the most serene settings.
His editor thought that was a weird way to end a story about a shootout, especially one in which someone died.
I turned to him, I said, I know where that comes from. And I said, that's AI.
Baker says it sounded a lot like writing he'd seen from a chatbot. Still, he says suspecting another paper's reporter was using AI wasn't a story in itself. But then he started finding other parts of stories that he thought were made up. So he reached out to people who'd been quoted by the reporter in Cody. Seven people said they'd never talked to him, including the governor, an astronomer, and a raccoon expert.
I think there's a lot of room for disagreement in journalism about how best to do things, but the red line is that you never make stuff up.
At a think tank in Florida, one of the leading experts on AI was also intrigued.
I couldn't stop thinking about it. I had never heard of a reporter using AI to generate quotes yet.
Alex Mahadevan is with the Poynter Institute. Baker got his take on the situation before publishing his investigation. Mahadevan had seen other kinds of misuses of the technology, like having AI write stories and creating fake bylines. But not like this. He says things like that Yellowstone paragraph are a dead giveaway.
So you might see a paragraph that tries to sum up the situation and wrap it up in like a nice bow that, you know, somebody would try to write on their SAT.
The scandal was picked up by media outlets around the country, and reporters have continued to talk about the ramifications. For his part, Mahadevan is a big proponent of using some AI in journalism, especially in small newsrooms.
They should be using generative AI to do transcription, meeting summaries, to try to cover more communities, experimenting with ethical but innovative ways to do your jobs better.
But he says it's critical to have a clear public policy on how it's being used. The Cody Enterprise reporter who resigned is not commenting, but the paper's leaders apologized and said they now have a system in place to catch AI-generated stories. The Powell Tribune, which uncovered the scandal, is also working on developing a policy. And other newsrooms around Wyoming are paying attention.
I'm Sarah Squires. I'm the managing editor of The Ranger, Wind River News, and Lander Journal newspapers.
Over in central Wyoming, Squires runs a pretty traditional newsroom. The walls are plastered with calendars and story ideas. The radio and a police scanner run in the background. Squires' newsroom has a policy of not using AI. And when news of the use in Cody broke, she made sure to tell her audiences that in an editorial. And she's making sure she knows what all of her writers' voices sound like, so she could detect any AI.
AI will never be something that we use for writing, but we do see potential out there in terms of maybe using AI to like sort large volumes of data.
But she's also keeping her reporters focused on basic techniques like talking to people and opening up books instead of always relying on computers.
Walk on your two legs and go to the library, go to the historical society.
And do that kind of old-fashioned reporting. For Wyoming Public Radio, I'm Hannah Mersbach in Jackson.
Many school districts are conducting an experiment this year. They're outright banning cell phones. The Mountain West News Bureau's Rachel Cohen takes us to one Colorado high school to see how it's going.
It's the third day of school at Doherty High in Colorado Springs. 1,700 teenagers file through the doors as security guard Lonnie Barrett checks IDs.
Good morning, thank you.
This year, he's also inspecting cell phones.
Can I see your phone?
According to a new policy, students need to put their phones away all day inside special pouches. Barrett checks each one. And only a few minutes into the morning rush, he's found a pouch that's suspicious.
What is this? This isn't a phone. This is a box of extra gum.
He hands the student the gum stuffed inside in place of a phone. Barrett says this happens a few times each morning.
They'll put like empty cases or even an old broken phone that doesn't even work anymore. They'll try to put that in there and sneak it past us. It's been entertaining.
Many kids simply tell him they left their phones at home. He has his doubts.
You don't have yours?
So he reminds them there are consequences if they're caught with their phones. Standing nearby is the principal, Hillary Hinton.
Wait, where's your phone? Is it in there?
Yeah. She explains to me how the system works. The gray fabric pouches are designed by a company called Yonder. They magnetically lock, so the phones are trapped all day. To unlock them requires visiting a magnet station by the front office.
You just hit one of the side of the Yonder pouch to the magnet.
The pouches cost the district more than $300,000. But Hyten says rampant cell phone use reached a point where doing something felt necessary.
In classrooms, it turned into a lot of power struggles. Students didn't want to put their phones away or give up their phones.
School leaders also cite the research showing phones and social media are harmful for youth mental health. Lots of districts around the region agree. This year, schools in the Salt Lake City, Las Vegas, and Boise areas are declaring their campuses and classrooms phone-free. Others ditched them last year.
This is the best policy change we've ever made in my career of 28 years.
Jim Foudy is a superintendent of a school district in Idaho. He says their ban has gone smoothly.
We actually hired a teacher who had a few different job offers and said that he chose to work for Blaine County because this policy was in place.
Back at Doherty High, students in Aaron Onfeldt's English class are passing around a ball of yarn. It's a lesson about connections between each other and books they'll read. Onfeldt says he feels like he did when he began teaching, before smartphones were everywhere.
I think it's a courageous move.
In the first week, he's already noticed a difference. Last year, when he gave students a break between lessons, they'd pick up their phones.
This year, every time I give them a 5-minute break, they just talk to each other. So then that makes the feel of a community in a classroom way more powerful.
I hate this new phone system a lot.
Eli Howard is a junior. He doesn't think the policy will make students pay attention in class, and he worries about safety. Earlier in the morning, the school was put on a hold during a potential emergency. It turned out to be nothing, but Howard was scared.
I was like, dude, what if there's someone in here and I can't, my mom and dad, I can't talk to them.
Other students, like Dante Click, say they understand where the school is coming from.
I don't think adults are crazy for this one. Kids are definitely on their phone too much, but I think it's gonna backfire on them.
Click says some kids are breaking the pouches, and many ask Principal Hinton why the school is doing this to them.
I say I care about you and I care about your education, and I want to make sure that you have the tools and the skills and the competencies that are going to make you successful in life.
She says phones are a distraction from that success. For the Mountain West News Bureau, I'm Rachel Cohen.
Thank you for listening to Open Spaces. The entire show and all the stories you heard here can be found on our website at wyomingpublicmedia.org. It can also be found wherever you get your podcasts, and we post all our stories on the station's social media platforms. Thanks to Ivy Engel, today's audio producer and digital producer, and thank you to Cody Hume, our social media manager. Open Spaces is a production of Wyoming Public Radio News.